I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's been a while since Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney was a guest on the show, and we have a lot to talk about. The construction boom continues with cranes dotting the skyline in Center City, and surrounding neighborhoods are undergoing urban renewal and revitalization, all signs of a city on the move. The SRC no longer runs the school system. The authority was returned to a local school board, something the mayor supported in a big way. Philadelphia is a sanctuary city, and Mayor Kenney has taken on the Trump administration's efforts to punish Philadelphia. The Kenney administration declared the heroin encampment in Kensington a disaster and has been working to move people into shelters and addiction treatment. Tragically, poverty and food insecurity remain an intractable problem. Philadelphia was also one of the cities trying to woo Amazon to set up a second national headquarters and lost out to Queens and Arlington, Virginia. And we can't forget that Philadelphia recently gave the country Gritty, the scruffy orange mess of a sports mascot turned meme turned city ambassador. As I said, we have a lot to talk about. Mayor Kenney, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to join our conversation. I did not mention crime in my introduction, so let's start there. The homicide rate so far, about 300 people have been killed in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's about a 5% increase from this time last year.
Exactly. So things are on the rise.
The shootings are up.
The shootings are up. Four people were killed in a kind of gangland-style shooting about a week ago. There is a new plan to battle this crisis. Apparently, your administration is going to release that in early January. Can we wait till then?
Well, I mean, it's frustrating because the access to guns in this country and in the city is unfettered. We have a president that, you know, hugs the Second Amendment like a teddy bear. We have a state legislature that won't even pass a bill to require stolen guns to be reported, which creates a straw purchase problem. And we have a responsibility to try to get as many guns off the street as we can, and we've gotten more guns off the street in the last couple of years than we have in prior years. However, a lot of our shootings have to do with vengeance. I'll go back to when I was a kid. When I was a kid, somebody disrespected you or did something to you that you were angry about, you usually had a fist fight. These kids, instead of having fist fights now, are shooting each other because they can get a gun. It's easier than they can get a library card. And if you're intent on waiting out that guy and shooting him, it's difficult for the police to get between it. Now, we monitor social media. We talk to people on the street, and our police officers do a great job. But if you're intent on killing someone or shooting someone over a vengeful act, it's difficult for us to get between that. And then on the tragic shooting of the four people in the house, I don't know how you police that.
Because it's in someone's basement.
It's in a basement. I mean, if it's on the street or we know something may happen, then we get between it. But the ability to get a gun at a snap of a finger is creating the situation. Now look, one death is one too many, and we are up a bit, as I said, about 5% from this time last year. But you go back to 07, I mean, there was close to 400. So the numbers game is difficult because the numbers fluctuate for various reasons, multiple reasons, and we do our best every day to keep it down. Our other crime issues are down significantly. It's just this stubborn shooting and homicide issue is just, I get up every morning, first thing I do is I go to my phone and I look up on the Philly crime map and try to see where we are that day. It's not something that I like living with or having to deal with, but we're going to continue doing it until we get the numbers down.
Well, and there's obviously no easy solution. There is something called focused deterrence, the idea that there are a small group of people responsible largely for the problem of violent crime. Is that a way to address what you just described?
Focused deterrence can be effective. It's a long-term process. But at the end of that process, if there's not a job for these young men, they're going to be on the street hustling. They got to eat, and they're going to be out hustling to survive. And what we're working on from our perspective is trying to get some of these young men engaged in getting out of that gang life, out of that thug life, and get it, you know, the 12th Police District, the captain out there has come up with a nice plan where our officers are engaging young men on the street corner saying, would you like to be recommended? Would you like to be recommended for a training program? It helps with community police relations and also practically helps, I think there's about, I don't know the exact number, the last time I heard it was about 60 or so people that are going through this program. And at the end of it, hopefully there will be a job there for them that we're working with our human resource folks to try to make sure we have jobs lined up for these young men, because unless there's a job at the end, they're still going to hustle, they're still going to deal drugs, and they're going to either shoot somebody or be shot.
I mentioned in my introduction the fact that Philadelphia's poverty rate is really just stubborn. It's around 25%. Sometimes it fluctuates a point or two, but nonetheless, a quarter of the city is poor. Many of them, about 300,000, are in deep poverty, right, meaning really subsistence level. For all the efforts of you and previous mayors, well-intentioned, we have not been able to reduce this number.
Well, this is generational poverty. I mean, this is generations of people who have grown up poor. The primary reason that's happened is education, and that's why we've begun to address the educational issues in our pre-K program, in our community school program, and trying to get our facilities up to speed when it comes to libraries and recreation centers, where a lot of people go during the day or after school to get the extra help, homework help, computer access, those kinds of things. We've been hampered by the Beverage Association that has sued us and held us up for 2 years. We could have been even further along in our plans, but thankfully the Pennsylvania Supreme Court sided with us, and they're still trying actually to preempt us in Harrisburg. I mean, they won't stop. These guys are extremely wealthy people. They don't really care about our kids as far as their educational needs, and are just, you know, want to continue to put money in their own pocket as opposed to allowing these young people the opportunity to do better and to meet their potential, and that will drive crime down. But nothing happens quickly, and I know people are frustrated, but we've been in less than 3 years, and we are continuing to put in place our programs, even though we were hampered by the Beverage Association with the lawsuit.
But why the Beverage Association? I mean, why, in a sense, hit up them as opposed to other businesses?
Because we believe, and the court agrees with us, that the impact of the beverage tax is minimal compared to the benefits of it. Sugar beverage consumption is down significantly in minority communities, especially amongst young kids. The additional benefit, in addition to the revenue, is people will drink less of it, and they'll get less diabetes. There'll be less health issues. There'll be less obesity. So we felt that was something that you didn't need. It was a choice, and I still buy it. I buy diet, but I pay the tax. That we've had issues relative to retailers gouging people. I had a young man tell me about a year ago that he was really happy with our administration and liked the work that we were doing, but it cost him a dollar extra on a 16-ounce soda. And I told him to go back to the store and get your 75 cents back, because the guy ripped you off for 75 cents.
How common do you think that is?
That's been rampant. We're trying to get our way to finding out how we track those folks down. But it's a product that you don't need. It's not air. You don't need it to survive. It raises significant revenue for us to implement these programs.
Well, let me ask you about hunger. And this is Hunger Free America revealing that almost 20% of the city is hungry or is unable to make sure that there's enough money and enough food at the end of the month. The median household income dropped a little bit. It's about $40,000 in Philadelphia. The median U.S. Income is more like $61,000. Right. As long as you have this dragging on the city's economy, what can you do?
We can raise the minimum wage, which would significantly help.
Don't you have to go to Harrisburg for that?
Yeah, that's just my point. My point is that, you know, instead of building a $25 billion wall, if we put that into drug treatment, if we put that into education, so a lot of times the agendas of other governments affect what we have available to us to address our problems. I mean, I think in the end, public education should be free. I think public universities should be free. There's no reason in the world. I mean, if you live in Canada, you can go to a top-notch higher education institution for $3,000 a year. I mean, think about that when you're paying, you know, Penn State or Pitt tuition. I mean, and it doesn't help.
But this is America. I mean, whether we like it or not.
We're supposed to be smart. And if we were smarter, our people would earn more and they'd have more opportunity, as opposed to not being able to make a choice to go to college or to go to college and then be saddled with $100,000 debt when you graduate.
But make that argument to Harrisburg then. I mean, if the idea is to have a living wage or to raise the minimum wage in Philadelphia, but you right. need the okay from Harrisburg.
We're looking at some options here in Philadelphia for ourselves. We recently raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour on contractors that contract with the city to pay their employees. If you have a contract with the city, your employees need to make $15 an hour at least. We are trying to get more people to join labor unions because the opportunity to bargain for your wages, benefits, and health care is there, and that's a great opportunity. We've done a lot of work at the airport. With the subcontractors working for the airlines that were paying, you know, $7 and $8 an hour to clean planes and to push people through the airport in wheelchairs, and we've been able to work with SEIU and to get those folks organized and get their wages up. I think they're up to $12 or $13 an hour now. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you can't have a very wealthy country that has a 1% or so of the people that can consume or control the wealth. And then give them a trillion-dollar tax break and argue that $15 an hour is too much for someone to make. I mean, that's $15. $15 is not enough, but it's better than $7 or $8. So we can continue to push in that direction and do what we have to, we can do to we have in our community schools. We have food banks. I work with Phil Abundance closely. Just came from another radio station's effort to raise awareness and contributions to the food bank. I think we're doing everything that we can on our level. It's just that we're not getting the help that we need. And you have people in the Trump administration talking about cutting benefits, food stamps. Mm-hmm. I mean, benefits for poor people and poor children. I mean, this is a not very compassionate administration.
Well, we're about a minute or so away from our break here, but I'm curious about your response to Councilwoman Helen Gim was on our show recently talking about the Fair Work Week, the idea that there are lots of part-timers working for hotels and restaurants who literally cannot make ends meet. Where does your administration
stand
on that?
We will ultimately support the bill that comes out of council. There's been a lot of negotiation with the industries and Helen and other members of council. There's been some amendments that have been added to, which makes the business people happier. A really successful piece of legislation is that everybody's not totally happy. People are happy with parts of it. Mm-hmm. The business community, the people promoting it, the people who are the workers. So in the end, I think we'll get to a point where I'll sign something that does do most of what they wanted to do with some consideration for the business community.
A tweet from Victoria. What are the city's plans for the $421 million budget surplus for the last fiscal year?
Well, we're having that conversation now. Some of that has to be set aside for wages and benefits. Some can be put into a rainy day fund when we're trying to figure out the mechanics of that. The problem that we have is we can't, by law, without a ordinance change, without a charter change. We can only put money in the rainy day fund one time a year. So if we come up with money for example, now we realize we have more in the surplus than we thought, we are not legally able to put money into the rainy day fund. We have to put some money in our pension fund. So we're having that negotiation conversation now with council and the council president's office to see what we do with it. You have to remember that also there. You know, the stock market issue that you see, there's going to be a correction. I don't think it's going to be a recession.
Because of all the wild fluctuations.
It's going to be a correction. And when that correction comes, we need to be ready.
And that's Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY. In Philadelphia, I'm Marty Moskowain talking with Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney about the numbers of challenges facing the city and obviously some of the programs his administration has been putting into effect to deal with some of this. Let me read some more comments. A tweet from Dave. Please ask the mayor about the status of his campaign promise to restart street sweeping. We're the only major city that does not provide this basic service, and it is frustrating that we cannot shrug off our filthy Delphia reputation.
Right. We are looking at reinstituting some form of street cleaning. The problem is the physical problem, and this is what goes back to years ago when Frank DiCicco was councilman.
Oh,
came
wow.
up with a street sweeping program, put all the signs up, had to move your car one day a week, and he was concerned about his reelection because people wouldn't move their cars and they were so angry that their streets were being swept. Think about how insane that is, that you're angry at your local elected officials because they're sweeping streets. Now, so people were kind of gun-shy about doing that. I mean, part of the problem, and I've lived in the city my whole life, part of the problem is people throw their trash at their feet. And we have a responsibility to keep up with it. I recognize it. I'm not trying
to, as a city,
to skirt that responsibility. But when people continually trash their own streets, or throw their McDonald's bags out their windows, or empty their ashtrays in the sidewalk, or put out your trash haphazardly on the wrong day, or fill up with your household trash, fill up the city trash cans all week long, it's a difficult thing to keep up with. So, I mean, other cities.
But is that something about Philadelphia?
I don't know.
I mean, other cities are cleaner.
When I was a child, there was a weekly street cleanup. I mean, people scrubbed their steps, they swept their thing, they put the hydrant on, and clean their street. And I'm not suggesting that people do that. I know people still do that now. There are active and organized neighborhoods that do that. But there are some neighborhoods that, and I ride through, and I get upset, disgusted with it, and I call out a crew to get it up. But people are just dumping their stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. Construction debris, their couch, a refrigerator. It's really an epidemic that I don't understand. First. Secondly, we're trying to figure out how we physically do it on a regular basis without having a revolt of people who don't want to move their cars. I mean, I think in Manhattan, they move their cars twice a week. It doesn't seem to bother them. But there's always this, and I don't want to just do it in neighborhoods that want to accept it. I mean, I would like to have a comprehensive program of doing it. And again, I'm sorry that we haven't done it yet, but we're working on it.
Well, maybe Gritty can help.
Gritty. I don't understand Gritty.
You don't understand Gritty?
No, I don't. I don't. It's like I went to the opening. I went to the first
game. I don't think anyone understood it, when Gritty was debuted.
I went to the first game of the Flyers this year, and they debuted Gritty, and they booed him. And I think
of course.
Part of the fun was booing him. And I think he became like kind of attractive to folks because you could boo him and because he would look so crazy. And I wonder what the fanatic feels like. He must feel like a little bit unloved.
We'll have to bring them together and do some therapy here on Radio Times. Let me read an email from Rob. He says, kudos to the mayor on his commitment to education. What is the mayor's plan, if anything, to address rideshare traffic? Ubers and Lyft clog up already busy streets and drop passengers wherever they please.
Here we go again. This is about consideration of other people. I get frustrated with the Uber guy can't pull to the curb, or the cab can't pull to the curb, or someone's double parked in a bike lane, or they're blocking traffic, the bus can't get by. It's about people's lack of consideration for each other. I was in London recently, and I watched that city operate. People follow the rules. They don't cross against the light. They don't turn into the crosswalk when people are in it. They stop at red lights. We have a center city problem because we have more people working downtown now. We have more people living in the city, which is a good thing. And we are working on a comprehensive plan with the police department and the parking authority. I know everybody hates the parking authority, but unless they enforce, unless there's enforcement, you're not going to have a capable system. But when the parking authority enforces, then people complain or enforce. I just stopped for a minute. Well, you're not supposed to stop for a minute. That's why you're caught. So we are trying to work out. We're putting more police commissioner has put more people who are graduating from classes into the traffic division. We have more officers now in intersections in Center City during rush hour. A lot of people block the box. They try to beat the light, and then they wind up clogging up traffic both sides. So a lot of this is human lack of consideration, but we are forcing more the double parking and the Uber stuff.
But as mayor, do you wish you had more power, more authority to make people behave?
That's just human nature. People have to want to do the right thing. When that person dumps that bag of trash on somebody else's property, they know they're doing wrong. It's just their lack of consideration. But we have a responsibility to still address the problems, which we are attempting to do as we speak.
Let me give out that phone number to join our conversation with Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney, and it's 1-888-477-9499. We've got a lot of comments here as well. RadioTimes@WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. Well, let's talk about the opioid crisis in Philadelphia, and I know that your administration has been working to basically take apart some of these encampments that are in Kensington and find services, maybe even shelter homes, apartments, some kind of living arrangement for people who have been living in tents on the street or just living on the street. How did Philadelphia become this epicenter?
Well, first of all, it's the greedy pharmaceutical industry and doctors who overprescribe opioids. And the pharmaceutical companies telling people that opioids were not addictive. That was just a lie, and it's a greedy lie. So we have people who, you know, have a sports injury or has a work injury or something happens to them, the surgery, and they're prescribed this. I mean, I had surgery a little while ago and, you know, left the hospital. They wanted to give me 30 oxycodones. I'm like, why do I need 30? I mean, why would I ever need this? So it's that kind of stuff. We work with the hospital, our hospital group in Philadelphia to kind of reduce the number that go into a prescription when people do leave the hospital. But once they get addicted to the opioids, which can happen really quickly, and their prescription can no longer be filled, they turn to heroin, right. And they wind up – a lot of the people that –
apparently Philly has cheap heroin.
Cheap heroin, and it's laced with fentanyl, which is a toxic combination that's killed 1,200-plus people last year. Our idea of success is less overdose deaths, more people off the street. I mean, we had that encampment on Gurney Street. Right. The people in the community wanted us to move it. We moved it. Ironically, through interviewing people who come in for treatment, who were under the train tracks
the
and
overpass.
Stuff, the overpasses, they were not from Gurney Street. So we have the last time I checked was about 160 plus people in some type of bed or treatment. We can't just move people without a place for them to go. So we have to set up a system where we have enough beds for the folks before we move them. We've moved 3 out of 4 encampments, and none of the 3 encampments have repopulated. So we're doing better there. We're kind of on our own. We're not getting the help. This is a national epidemic. West Virginia has been you know, is under siege with this. There are parts of rural Pennsylvania that are going the same thing. And I think a lot of the folks that are there aren't originally Philadelphians. They're coming from different parts of the state, New Jersey, and because they have access to the heroin, it's there. We're working with the with our federal partners and, you know, and the FBI and Department of Justice, ATF, and the like, trying to get a hold of where the flow is coming from, and they've been terrific partners with us, and we're working with them on a regular basis. It's just the human misery that we're trying to address, mm-hmm. And again, we're trying to get as many beds as possible and as many treatment slots as possible.
As we all know, treatment for addiction is really complicated. It's fairly difficult. Oftentimes, people will try, and then for whatever reason, they go back to their addiction. Does Philadelphia have not just the number of beds, but the kind of sophisticated treatment for addiction?
The people, for example, Prevention Point, Temple Hospital, and we have enough wherewithal expertise to deal with it. It's getting the people, getting the slots, and then getting the people to agree to come in. Again, we can't just kind of rip people off the street and make them go into treatment. It's not going to work, and it's not even legal. So we've cleared Gurney Street. The 4 encampments that have been difficult, we've cleared 3 of those, and the next one will be cleared in January.
That's on, what is it, Emerald Street?
Emerald Street, yeah.
That's the last encampment.
That's the last one.
And you're saying
now, there are people on the street too, but we count about 700 people that are chronically on the street, and we're addressing those problems with our outreach people, our homeless staff, and our homeless network of folks, Sister Mary, and all those folks are trying to kind of get those people, but that's complicated with the addiction.
Thinking about people living in Kensington who, you know, had to pass through or maybe walk their children past the encampments.
I mean, you know, heroin's is nothing new. I mean, when I was a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s, we had a terrible heroin situation on the street I grew up on. I mean, they were selling out of the house and it was a mess. I mean, it wasn't as intense as it is, obviously, in Kensington and Fairhill and in these areas. But, I mean, this is something that I've witnessed and experienced growing up in my own little row house street. Eventually, I think one guy killed the other guy went to jail, and that's how they.
Oh my gosh! That's obviously not a prevention or treatment.
Can we get anything positive to talk about?
We got gritty in there, so yeah. You know. What about safe injection sites? And I know that this is going to be run by a nonprofit, but nonetheless, I believe has your support.
Our goal is no death. I mean, that's to eliminate death by overdose. They apparently work very well in Europe and in Canada. And And I understand it's kind of antithetical to law enforcement, and I understand law enforcement's concern. But you know, if the Department of Justice is threatening to arrest people who operate injection sites, then they should be trying to help us find the resources to get more beds and get more treatment slots. The ability for someone to inject safely under supervision or with people who are medically trained, if you do fall out, if you do overdose, they're there to save you. And if that's my relative, I certainly want someone there to be able to bring them back and also have the interaction with them to talk to them about treatment, talk to them about, you know, getting straight and giving them the assistance and the resources and showing them the resources that are available for them. And I think there's a better interaction there. If someone injects on the street and overdoses and dies, we don't have a chance to save them.
Is there the kind of cooperation you want between the police department and, let's say, case managers, people working on the street?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing soft handoffs, warm handoffs, they call them. We don't want to arrest. We can't arrest our way out of this problem. We tried that in the crack era, and it didn't work. It just incarcerated a whole generation or two of people and destroyed families. We can't be locking people up for being sick. This is a disease. It's, you know, it's against the law, but it's also a disease, and we need to treat it as a disease.
Let me get some callers in. I have half a name here. I'm looking at my screen. Anyway, we have a caller calling us from Philadelphia, and go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good to talk to you both. Mr. Mayor, do you see a relationship between the opiate epidemic and poverty?
Yes. I mean, I see a relationship.
That's Glenn, I'm sorry.
Poverty and lack of educational opportunities. Poverty and underemployment. Poverty and drug abuse and drug addiction. So I think that we're trying to put the resources in at the very front end with our children, so that by the time they're in third or fourth grade, they're reading at grade level, can progress through their educational opportunity, graduate from eighth grade, go to high school, go to college, or go to a training program, so that they don't have to resort to being depressed and not meeting their potential and then winding up on drugs.
Glenn, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me just do a quick follow-up. I was listening actually to The Why, which is our new program here at WHYY, interviewing a number of the people living in these encampments. And one of the things that they said, several of them said, was this was a community. I mean, from the outside, it looks just like mayhem and obviously some abject survivalism. But for them, it was a community.
Right.
How do you maintain a community when you're also taking it apart?
It's not workable to allow it to stay. I mean, it's just not. I mean, the people who live there are experiencing it at ground zero. They have a right to be angry and concerned, and we're trying to address the long-term residents that have been there and their children and their seniors that are experiencing this epidemic. We have to get people – have to keep them alive, number one, and number two, try to get them into treatment so they can be productive citizens and be part of all of our community, not just the community that's under the tracks.
A tweet from Ben, SEPTA ridership keeps falling year over year. SEPTA key fares are highly inequitable for low-income riders. The Chestnut Street bus lane pilot is half-baked and inconsistent at best. When will you start funding real transit upgrades beyond bus shelters?
Well, this is a situation, too, and it's been a long-term issue with the city and state. We do not have the majority of people on the SEPTA board. We have two members out of the I think there's 16 or whatever. Don't hold me to the number. And a lot of this is driven by the regional folks. The inequities of the key card system are being worked out. I talked with Jeff Knepple just the other day, and they recognize
people who are unbanked.
Right, they think a solution to the problem. The issue is that there's not been a long term investment anywhere in the country on it's been in highways and not in mass transit. I agree, mass transit is the answer. And again, just came back from London. I never saw a mass transit system like that ever. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And we're working to improve the best we can with the resources that we have. We can't raise fares continually because that drops ridership even more. So we are working with our partners at SEPTA to try to improve the system, and we're doing our best.
Let me read something. This is from the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'll read the headline. Philadelphia Councilman Kenyatta Johnson helped friend make $165,000 flipping city-owned lots. With the backing of City Councilman Kenyatta Johnson, a childhood friend of Felton Heyman, the Point Breeze developer sidestepped a thicket of city policies and made a killing in September by reselling two of three properties he purchased from the city just a month before at a fraction of their market value, money that could have gone to taxpayers.
Right.
Is this wrong?
Yes. And
what can your administration do about that?
Well, this first of all, the properties themselves were transferred in the last administration, not in this administration. We are trying to work with our land bank to make it a real land bank. The councilmatic prerogative, or whatever it is, it will only be ended by council. Because what you have is a political dynamic that says, of the 10 district council people, not one of those district council people are going to vote against another district council person on an issue relative to development or to property or land distribution, those kinds of things. So I don't know all the details of this, and I'm sure everything will come out at some point in time. Mm-hmm. But I think that we should be doing property distribution and development in a more transparent and an effective way.
And apparently FBI is looking at this particular case.
I don't know the details of what it is, and I trust them to sift through it and figure out what it is.
I mentioned by describing the construction boom. It's mm-hmm. all around us. Yep. We can see it. What does that tell us about Philadelphia?
We have more people living in Philadelphia than we did 10 years ago. We have more people employed in Philadelphia than we did 10 years ago. And actually, in the last couple of years, it's been even more exponential, the growth. That comes with problems we have to manage, like traffic and affordable housing and making sure that people aren't priced out of neighborhoods. So we've invested $53 million in affordable housing, and we're trending to support the additional $18 million the council wants to do, so we're putting more resources into it. We're dealing with eviction court. We're dealing with people being evicted from their homes, trying to keep that from happening or getting to the point of eviction, and trying to manage neighborhoods in a way that makes sense so when the neighborhood does have new people move in and the prices do go up, that the long-term residents don't experience that crunch. That's the long-term owner-occupant program, which is basically the long-term residents' 10-year tax abatement. They get the additional taxes deferred but forgiven for the next 10 years. If they have to sign up for it, and they should go to their district council office and sign up for it, or go on the city website to sign up. If you're a long-term resident living in a gentrifying neighborhood, you have access to this program.
Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney. We've been talking about a lot of things, and we want to hear from you. A lot of comments here, which I will read after this short break. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney. Let me read some more tweets or comments here. A tweet from John: only 13% of the city is zoned to be eligible for the city council's new inclusionary zoning program. Is 13% the right number? If not, what is? And what neighborhood should be rezoned to allow more inclusionary zoning?
Inclusionary zoning is, and people know that it gives height and size advantages to developers who are willing to design into the parcel or the development affordable housing. I don't know if that's the right way to go or not, or just charge additional money to the developer to go into a fund to provide it affordable housing. I think a mix of both is probably the right way to go. I don't know the 13% number. I was not aware that that was the number, and I don't know if it's the right number or not. But we do need to make sure that people are not – with the growth that we're having, which is a good thing, we're the highest millennial city in – millennial growth city in America. We have a large number of tech startups. People are starting businesses here. We're 23% less expensive than our East Coast peers. Housing is less expensive than our East Coast peers, Boston, New York, Washington, D.C. So we do have a lot – with all the things we've been talking about on the negative side, there's positive sides of that too. But we have to make sure that what made a neighborhood what it is, what made it attractive, which is the people who've lived there a long time, you don't want to chase those folks out or squeeze them out with taxes or assessments. We need to continue to address those issues so people can maintain their home, maintain their dignity and their asset, and at the same time experience the growth that makes the neighborhood better.
Jake Blumgard, who writes for Plan Philly here at WHYY, wanted to know, sent me a couple of questions. One saying, earlier this month, the Philadelphia Bar Association released a study showing that if the city spent $3.5 million a year, every poor renter would be provided an attorney in eviction court. Does that seem like money well spent?
We are having this discussion with council in the pre-budgetary process. And again, the money that we're spending now, we appropriated last year. The budget process will begin again after the first of the year. We will do a budget address, but in the meantime, we're talking to council members on their priorities, the things that they want. There are a number of council members who do support that program, and we'll have that negotiation, and hopefully we can come up with that or somewhere close to it.
A tweet from Rachel: what is the mayor's plan for getting the lead out of Philadelphia? And we should say the lead problem in Philadelphia is largely about paint and dust.
Right. I had a meeting just the other day with PCCY, who are Philadelphia Citizens for Children and Youth. We had a comprehensive discussion about in this upcoming budget to talk about a program that would allow either the encapsulation of the woodwork that has the lead paint or the removal of it and reapply non-lead paint. That could be an opportunity for some young folks to get some experience in the construction trades, in the painters union, those kinds of things. And the painters union is supportive of the painter and glaziers union is supportive of a program like that. Mm-hmm. So we may have a win-win-win in the end, getting more lead out of the houses. We really need to do something more with certification. There's not a lot of properties that are certified, and we have to make sure that these folks are sending in their certifications. There's a group of landlords who do that, and apparently it's not a chore for them to do it, to certify that the house is lead free. And we're going to be going ratcheting up the enforcement on that certification.
As we all know, Amazon was, in a sense, pitting cities against each other, looking for a second headquarters. There's something kind of unseemly about cities, especially like Philadelphia. I think the city said that there was $1.1 billion worth of goodies that was going to be given to Amazon, a very wealthy company owned by a very wealthy guy.
Yeah, because they can.
Is that the reason? Because they can?
Because they can. I mean, it's 50,000 jobs. I mean, you can't just allow that opportunity to go by you without trying to get it. We did make it to the last 20,
right.
And that says a lot for our presentation. It says a lot for our assets. It says a lot for our business community, labor unions working together, our government working with all of them together to put our best foot forward. Doing that also gives us a base to go after other companies, not just Amazon, but this is good for attraction of other companies, smaller than them, of course, but certainly providing jobs. We have a lot of downtown space that's available at a relatively inexpensive price compared to, New York and Boston and D.C., and we have areas of the city that are zoned appropriately for these kinds of businesses. So you have Schuylkill Yards, the Navy Yard. So we have our act together when it comes to our approach to other businesses that may want to come here. We've had a number of decent wins of retaining companies and then also attracting pieces of other companies like Vanguard and like. We're doing well, and it's Amazon. You know, I would have loved
some
to
relief that someone else
No. But there's no anger there. I mean, I still use the website. I still order from them. It's one of the best websites I've ever dealt with. It's something click click click, and it, 2 days it's there.
24 hours
it's
later, you
it's
get
wonderful.
I do
think that we weren't offering anything extraordinary. I mean, we are offering
$1.1 billion,
but it's a TIF. We've done 20 different projects, of course, of our city's history with a tax increment financing plan. This is not something that was new. We've TIFed a number of different projects. It's just that they're so massive. It's over $1 billion worth of potential tax increment financing opportunities. The state, I don't have the details of what the state was offered, but there was more money.
I think it was five.
Yeah, five.
Total, or maybe four plus Philadelphia.
This isn't writing a $1.4 billion check. No, this is stuff that you're forbearing in order to get them here. So if they don't come here, you're not getting it anyway. So to forbear some type of, to allow them to put the taxes they would pay into their financing, to me, there's no money out of our pocket. Because, if they don't come, you don't get the taxes anyway.
But you've identified $1.1 billion worth of something.
Tax forbearance.
Yeah.
But that's not translating to cash. We don't have $1.4 billion in cash on hand to do that. That would have been something over a course of 30 years that would have been forgiven or forborne, which would have allowed them to come here or made an incentive them to come here. But that's not something we can divert to another program. I can't take $1.4 billion and put it in lead paint removal. We don't have the money. The only way we would have had the money is if Amazon came here.
Let me read some more comments. Actually, a question from Steve. Philadelphia is a World Heritage Site, but it seems like every week a beautiful old building is torn down. How do we prevent that from happening?
Well, the issue is that there's three registers. There's the local register, the state register, and the national register. The one that really counts is the local register. And if it's not on the local registry, there's a lot more ability that a developer has in removing a building that may be on the national register, may be on the state register, but if it's not on the local preservation register, they have a lot more leeway to be able to tear a building down by right. So we're working to try to get as many. We put some more staff on the historic commission to designate more properties. I know the historic preservation folks have been putting properties on there, and it's the only way to save them, unless the owner or the developer recognizes the value of the architecture and wants to maintain some of it. For example, the train shed at Broad and Washington Avenue, which was a exit point for many, many thousands of soldiers during the Civil War. That was the frame of that, or the outline of that, was basically maintained in the grocery store, Sprouts.
I've heard of that.
So they maintain some edifice, parts of the edifice, doing things like that. But unless it's on the local register, there's not a lot of safety there.
Are you going to go see Bob Dylan at the Met?
He's
the opening
what's
act.
What's the date?
I believe it's Monday the 6th, something like that.
I would
that.
Like to. But the Met's a perfect example of a developer who understands the value of that architecture. Same thing with the Divine Lorraine. I mean, so we have developers who care about that stuff and some that don't.
Let me get Eric from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Eric, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, I have a question for the mayor on public education. I have a son. He's in second grade. He goes to a elementary school, Mayfair Elementary in Northeast Philadelphia. I just wanted to know what your administration would be doing to add further support in the classrooms. It still seems like he has a lot of kids in his class, and that the teacher could use some more resources. So my question is what, in terms of resources and additional support would be going towards public schools, because all I see is a lot about charter schools.
Well,
Eric, I appreciate
it. With council, have appropriated about $500 million in new money over the next 5 years for our public schools specifically. The problem with Harrisburg has been that when Governor Corbett was governor, we used to get reimbursed for the children who left the traditional public school who went to a public charter school. I think that about 80% of the money stayed with the traditional public school. Now that percentage is reversed. About 80% of the money leaves because we don't get reimbursed in the state anymore. So we're hopefully working with Harrisburg to try to get that reinstated. The way that will happen, I believe, is when they raise the personal income tax in the state, which they need to do because they're running out of, they don't have any money, and they can't expand gaming any further. They can't put gaming in, daycares and laundromats. And I mean, the answer to all these economic problems or these revenue problems of the state has been expand gaming, which is, fine, I guess, but it's not going to solve your problem long term. And the infrastructure problem and the education issues facing the Commonwealth can best be paid for from a raise in the personal income tax, which they're going to have to do.
Well, and the school's now run by the school board as opposed to the SRC.
Correct.
Do you expect big changes or
I expect, well, first
usual?
Of all, there's more people on the school board than there is in the SRC, so there's going to be more hands on deck to run committees and to examine things like our infrastructure issues in the schools. I mean, at some point in time, we're going to have to build some new schools, and we're going to have to maybe kind of incorporate two or three schools in one new larger school. I don't know if that's the answer yet, but that's kind of where we're looking at. And then maybe close the older buildings or sell them to developers on residential or whatever forever use. But you have to have a nice, clean, modern, up-to-date school building in order to teach effectively. And I think that's the direction that Dr. Height and the school board is going to go to.
It's
a lot of money, but it's our kids' education is critical. I mean, we're a poor city, and we have a high poverty rate and other issues associated with it because we haven't invested in education for generations. And we've been waiting for Superman to fly in from Washington to save us or from Harrisburg to save us, and it's not going to happen. So when I have to raise a beverage tax in order to provide $80 million plus in educational opportunities for our kids, I know people don't like it, but I mean, I don't know where I can't. We're not the federal government. We can't print money, and we have to find it somewhere. And if we're not getting it from other governments, we can't allow our kids to fall back and lose ground with the rest of the world without investing in it.
Eric, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me ask you about Philadelphia as a sanctuary city. You are an ardent supporter of the city being a sanctuary city. Let me quote the former Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. He said, cities like Philadelphia send a message to criminals. We will protect you. If there is someone here who is here illegally and commits a, yes, let's say, a violent crime, what happens?
I just have to laugh at comments like that because there are more people indicted or under investigation in this administration than I've ever seen, except they're very wealthy guys who buy expensive furniture and take private jets around. So that to me is just like a ridiculous statement. What we committed to, and what Judge Bailson, who is a federal judge appointed by a Republican, reported by George H.W., one of the Bushes. He was a former U.S. attorney in Philadelphia. He's not soft on crime. He's a moderate conservative Republican. He lambasted them in his opinion, sided with us.
And they wanted to withhold money.
They lost. And they'll win it. They may win at the Supreme Court by the time they get up to the PAC court. But the point is that what Judge Bailson basically said is you want someone, you have to get a warrant. That's the way our system works. They can't unilaterally hold somebody in jail for 72 hours. Think of it this way. You got a guy arrested for DUI or for retail theft or whatever, and he's not a documented person. That person is arrested by the police. They're read their Miranda rights. They're taken to a judge. They're charged. And then they're either held without bail, or they're given bail, or they're allowed to leave on their own recognizance. That's an order signed by a common police court judge. That's presented to the prison, and the person's released. Mm-hmm. If ICE or if the Department of Justice wants us to hold that person, they need to provide a warrant, a federal warrant. And then we'll turn the person over. We've done it 5 or 6 times in the last year. So it's not like we don't cooperate with them at all, but they want us to hold someone without charge. That's not constitutional. And I know that the federal government doesn't.
Even for someone who's not a citizen.
Correct. No, it's the people. The Constitution applies to people who reside in the country, not just citizens. It's the way our system works.
Let me read an email from Casey related to this. Could the mayor please articulate why it's okay to be in the United States without entering legally? I'm very much in favor of immigration and diversification, but the law comes first. Without proper policy and procedure, there's only chaos like what we see at the California border this weekend.
The chaos is created by Donald Trump and his wacky ideas on sending troops and tear gassing people. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. There were laws on the books down south that a certain person or people could not sit at a lunch counter and have a sandwich. They couldn't ride on the front of the bus. They couldn't go to an integrated school. There were actual laws. They were wrong, those laws. And people objected to those laws, and they petitioned the court, and they did civil disobedience about those laws. All we're saying is that you have to have a comprehensive policy that people can depend on. If you can come to this country legally and you can't bring your family with you for 10 years, that's not what happened. You know, and the same thing happened throughout our entire history of immigration. And I'll use the Irish as an example. And right down the street here, the Know-Nothings burnt down a Catholic church, one of two that they burned to the ground, because they didn't want us here, but we weren't documented either. When we came, we got off the ships in Boston and New York and Philadelphia, and people said, get out of here, go home, we don't want you, no Irish need apply. And they thought we were a Catholic plot by the Pope to take over the country, just like they use Muslims now. This is just wrongheaded stuff. Come up with a policy, make it dependable, people will get in line. But if you're starving to death, it's hard to stay in line too long.
What's a good day in 30 seconds or less? What's a good day for you in Philadelphia?
Good day for me is spending time in a grade school or a kindergarten and seeing the potential of our kids and how we can help them meet that potential and eradicate poverty and drug addiction and crime.
On that note, Mayor Kenney, thank you for coming in and joining us on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And again, our guest has been Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney. We appreciate all the comments and calls as well. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about the program. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of the show, and Radio Times is produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowain. Thank you for joining us.